Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Happy Friday. I am Rich McFadden from Radio America here with you on your Friday Three Martini Lunch, along, as always, with Jim Garrity from the National Review Online. Going through your three martinis today, as always, the good, the bad, and the just plain crazy. And we'll start off with the good. And, Jim, it looks like some of the Iran nuclear guys in the middle of the implementation of our deal with them have some good news for us.
Well, yeah, this is from the great James Rosen over at Fox News. An exclusive to him, U.S. officials conclude Iran deal violates federal law, which, you know, a lot of people like to say, well, you know, never mind separately from whether you think this is a good idea or something. In the paperwork attached to what is called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, there's a section that basically says that in exchange for Iranian compliance with the terms of the deal, the U.S. shall license non-U.S. entities that are owned or controlled by a U.S. person to engage in activities with Iran that are consistent with this deal. In short version, meaning that if you're a non-U.S. entity, a foreign company that is owned by the U.S., is allowed to start doing trade with Iran. Now, what this problem is that the Iran Threat Reduction and Human and Civil Rights Act, which was signed into law by President Obama back in 2012, was very explicit in saying you cannot use foreign subsidiaries to trade with Iran.
Even if it's a U.S.
Yeah, you know, and basically the other thing is that, you know, this law also had said very clearly that if you are a foreign subsidiary, you are treated exactly the same way a U.S. firm is, meaning that if it's against the law for a U.S. company to trade with Iran, it is illegal for your subsidiaries to do it. So technically, if you sign up to trade with Iran under this, you are still violating this law. Now, I'm sure Obama was like, yeah, we'll just ignore that. But I don't think he has the authority under an executive order to just decide, here's a law passed in Congress, and I'm just not going to enforce that. And people might be saying, well, wait, can he just treat it like immigration law? Can he just not enforce
right.
it? But my understanding is that he can't. Now, what this means for the Iran deal, I would love to say this is going to derail it, the whole thing, and this is, you know, creates a huge problem. My guess is they're probably going to have to create some – they'll probably try an executive order workaround. But it does kind of indicate just how hastily this deal with Iran has been put together and how much they didn't really look closely at the past laws dealing
that
with
they
Iran.
Created.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, the idea is Obama is really going to assert that a deal that was rejected by the Senate, it was not passed. They didn't have the votes to overcome Obama's veto on it, but they basically did not and they couldn't overcome a filibuster on it. But this is not – the Iran deal does not have the force of law because it has never passed Congress. This rule restricting trade with Iran did. So it would be, you know, at the very least, it sounds up some pretty solid grounds for a challenge with this to this law, presuming there's not a Republican president in January 2017 who rips the whole thing up.
I cannot wait to see them defend their new law by bashing the old law that they created. That will be – get yourself some popcorn because that will be fun to watch. Don't listen to what I said 3 years
when
ago.
When we signed it into law, we didn't really mean it.
Yeah, exactly. I was just kidding. That didn't mean anything. All right, so there's your good martini for the day. The bad martini for the day, and you'll have to tell me whether this is bad or really bad, is the Pentagon has pretty much given up on their program to train and equip Syrian rebels who Russia is now bombing back to the borders.
Yeah. This is not really shocking bad news. We knew that this program had been going very badly for quite some time. What's interesting today is they're making it official. The Obama administration is ending the program to train and equip the Syrian rebels a mere $500 million later. To kind of paraphrase the great Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air, you really wish they hadn't given the contract to Solyndra. last time the government spent a whole lot and gotten really nothing. Now, what's interesting is they acknowledged that they have not created a single ground force capable of taking on the Islamic State. It did not succeed. Now, let's take the Wayback Machine.
Right.
To September of 2014, which the president gives a primetime address about you know, the crisis with ISIS, the circumstance over there, how things are getting worse. Remember that summer we'd seen beheadings of Americans. And here's, you know, across the border in Syria, we have ramped up our military assistance to the Syrian opposition. Tonight, I call on Congress again to give us additional resources and authorities to train and equip these fighters. So it's all Congress's fault for not moving fast enough. No, no, though. Actually, they do it. It does not succeed, and it's a disaster. So, you know, a year ago, it's please give us more help. This year, it's never mind. We totally messed it up.
What's the problem? It's just a JV team.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Who's looking like the JV team now?
Well, okay. At least they've got all of our weapons in there to be able to deal with. The ISIS has now. They're using all of our weapons that we've given them.
Yeah, all those new Toyota trucks. The flip side, of course, also is apparently just breaking from the BBC. Saudi Arabia announced they would be increasing their shipments to the fighters. They're not the al-Nusra group, which is al-Qaeda affiliated or ISIS, but against the Free Syrian Army and groups like that, sending them anti-tank weapons and heavier weapons. This does not appear to be making the situation any calmer or less violent. In fact, it's probably making it worse. My guess is you're going to see the refugee crisis get even worse from this. And I suppose you could say in a backhanded way, great, we've now convinced our allies to take a bigger role in this. But we are effectively conceding the battlefield.
And we've also created a proxy war for Iran and Saudi Arabia to fight with each other.
Well, it'll go well with the proxy war they're fighting in Yemen as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, there's the good news, I guess. And with the crazy martini of the day, this can't be any more fun to watch. Paul Ryan is the last man standing, it would seem. What's that going to happen with him with the speaker's chair?
Well, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. And one of the things that I'm finding fascinating. Yeah, go ahead.
Why not?
For starters, he doesn't want the job. He and Trey Gowdy are the two guys who keep getting, you know, suggested and mentioned and named and nominated, no matter how many times they say, no, I have a job. I like my job. I don't consider my work here finished. I don't want to do this. And in the case, look, the appeal of Paul Ryan is pretty obvious, although it's worth noting that you're starting to see some complaints from the corners like Red State and over at Breitbart over there. They don't like Paul Ryan. They think he's a squish. They think he's not conservative enough. He's not a fighter and all that stuff. Okay, well, fine. I do think it's kind of interesting that when the guy who was on the presidential ticket last time is a Republican in name only, you know, like what does Republican mean anymore? But for a whole bunch of reasons, maybe you think Paul Ryan is not the right guy for the job. And I among them was saying, like, when the guy insists he doesn't want it, and he's been asked many times and he's been encouraged many times. And he says, no, my goal in life, now that I will not be vice president, is to reform the tax code under a Republican president in January 2017. Ryan runs the Ways and Means Committee. It's arguably that, you know, you can seriously debate whether Ways and Means is actually a more powerful position than the speaker. It certainly is one with less responsibility. He gets to go home and spend time with his family on the weekends. If you are Speaker of the House, you have to spend a ton of time fundraising for everybody else.
Right.
You know, Paul Ryan knows what he wants out of life, and the speakership is not that. And we are going to drag him kicking and screaming into this job. And I just can't help but wonder how good he's going to be in this job if he really doesn't want it. But this is my perspective. The editors of National Review have already said he's probably the best choice for this. We will see how this shakes out. You're already here. Daryl Issa's name is getting thrown in there. I will make one kind of caveat to our selection of this as the crazy martini. It is crazy. But it is not chaos.
Let it fly. Let's hear it.
Well, see, Rich, you probably saw this morning, you know, all three networks, you know, chaos on Capitol Hill.
Right.
You know, Republicans are in disarray. It's been, well, first of all, nobody died. You know,
yep.
A Sharknado strikes me as actual chaos, right? You know, this is merely that, look, Kevin McCarthy pulled out, decided he didn't want to do it. Looked at the votes, so I didn't know the votes and said, all right, it's not going to happen for him. And right now there's nobody else who can get 218 votes. This means Boehner stays around. So we got to, you know, the question is who gets 218 votes? That's, you know, that's a dilemma. That's, you know, that's a debate. That's an argument. That's not chaos.
What about that other wild rumor that's running around that Newt Gingrich said he wouldn't mind stepping in temporarily until they found a new permanent speaker?
Yeah, which is a intriguing option. I think actually there are three words that kind of come to mind when I think about the idea of Newt Gingrich returning to the speakership, Rich.
Okay, let's hear it.
Frankly, fundamentally, and profound. Those are the three words that come to mind for Newt Gingrich, because they are Newt's three favorite words. Every time this happened, you see people throwing around, the Speaker of the House doesn't have to be a member, and so they throw out all kinds of figures. Here's the thing. If you're not a member, how invested are you in the success of everybody beneath you?
Well, you know, a lot of people will point to the fact that Newt was able to deal with Clinton, was able to get things done.
Much more reasonable Democratic president, I would argue. Yeah,
correct. But isn't that what we're looking for? You know, Trump is so popular because he's a deal maker, right? And he doesn't care what people say, and he's just going to get things done. And we all hearken back to the days when Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to be able to sit down over a drink and work things out. And it seems like in the past 10 to 15 years, nobody wants to work with anybody, and we get nowhere.
Well, my sense is that people's objection to Boehner was that he was too eager to get along, too eager to get the deal, and they didn't see him as standing and fighting enough. Here's a big part of the problem. For there to be leadership, there have to be people who are willing to be led. I think you just have a just fundamental basic split amongst Republicans on how they should be responding to a very difficult presidency, to a president who does not want to compromise, is willing to use executive orders to get his way, is willing to effectively ignore them. And in the cases of the Iran deal or certain things, or gun control proposals, Barack Obama doesn't care what public opinion says. He's going to do what he wants to do. So, my suspicion is that for all the griping about Boehner, maybe half of that was his fault, and maybe the other half is just baked in the cake of the circumstances. And so I want to have the most conservative speaker I can get. My suspicion is you could have, zombie Ronald Reagan in that role, and there are conservatives who would still not be completely happy with how it would shake out.
Yeah, I believe you're right. What we really need is somebody that can bring our party together and make them work together so that we can actually get something done, and God knows whether that'll happen. So, all right, there's your third martini for the day. It's the Friday martini, and we wish you a great weekend. Greg Corumbus will be back here on Monday to bring you your next week of martinis. And until then, that's Jim Garrity over there for the National Review, and I'm Rich McFadden with Radio America saying have a great weekend.